Mediatrix Radio presents Pathways to Rome, a weekly hour-long journey that brings Rome home for you. Father Jeffrey Kirby, along with Gus Killow and Kathy Kerfoot, take us on an audio tour of the Vatican where every work of art, building, and liturgical event is a unique expression of Christianity. The center of the Catholic faith teaches while it inspires, but there's a lot to learn. So let's join our tour guides for this week's apologetic adventure.
Hello, and welcome to our show, Pathways to Rome. I'm Father Jeff Kirby, along with Gus Killow and Kathy Kerfoot. And our show, Pathways to Rome, seeks to show the teachings and the events of Rome, what the heart of the Christian world, how this applies to our daily lives. Our show today will be talking about the Year of the Priest, declared by His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI. But first, it's worth asking, just how's life going? Gus, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thanks, Father. Yeah,
living the dream, huh?
Living the dream. My life consists of hearing stories about my kids and what they do, and I could write a book about it. So
that is awesome. Awesome. Kathy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. I wanted to share with you a story that I heard last week at Mass about priests and about nuns. There was a group of second and third graders sitting in church one day, and the nuns were all sitting in the back to watch over all the young students during Mass. And a little boy about the fifth row back from the altar gets up and starts fooling around and talking to people beside him and standing up and turning around and making faces at the
sounds
people
like
behind him.
Sounds like a great kid.
Sounds like my kids.
Sounds like a typical second or third grader. Anyways, the nun, who was his teacher in the back, says to the little girl who's sitting next to her, "Go up there and tell him to sit down and be quiet." And she says, "Sister, are you sure?" And she says, "Yes, I'm sure. Go tell him to sit down and be quiet." So the little girl walks up the aisle, goes up onto the altar, goes and whispers in the priest's ear while he's standing at the pulpit giving his sermon, and says, "Sister says, sit down and be quiet." And the priest looks up at the nun with wide eyes and says, "Yes, sister." And he goes and sits down. And so that's my little story. I heard that today last Sunday at church.
Well, you know, that what they say, even as a young priest, I quickly understood that the two most powerful words in the church, do you know what they are?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sister.
Exactly. Yes, sister.
I've always learned, "You're right, honey." You know, the three most important words that you can say in marriage. So.
That's great. Well, you know, what I like about that story, Kathy, is it shows in a comical way just the importance of religious life. I think that so many parishes, unfortunately, today don't have the witness of women religious in the parish, but they're such an essential part of the body of Christ, women religious, men religious, and as well as the church is just edified by them and strengthened by them and given so much grace by their vocation, but also the church is edified by those in holy matrimony. And, of course, those who are in holy orders, those men who are called to be shepherds of God's people, who are called to be priests. And that kind of leads us into our discussion today. I want to maybe throw out the topic of the Year of the Priest. We might be aware, many of our listeners might know or have heard. If not, we'd like to tell you about this Year of the Priest that Pope Benedict has declared for the coming year. Gus, why do you think the Pope has declared this Year of the Priest?
Well, I think it's awesome that he has. Our Catholic life comes to us through the sacraments. And Christ, when he worked miracles, he would you know, make mud from spit. I mean, it was very hands-on, and so he didn't just leave us a kind of a spiritual legacy, but we need the sacraments, and the priest is the alter Christus, the other Christ. So I think it's very important that we stress the priesthood, and I think it's great also, obviously, following some of the, you know, earlier scandals, that we go back and we say, no, look, the priesthood is essential to our Catholic life here.
Interesting that the Holy Father chose June 19th, which this year was the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart. It was also the 150th anniversary of the birth of St. John Marie Vianney, who is the patron saint of parish priests. Yeah. Kathy, why do you think the Holy Father has called this Year of the Priest?
I think he's called for the Year of the Priest because we are so desperately in need of supporting our priests and encouraging our priests and praying for our priests and praying for vocations to the priesthood. I think this is an awesome thing that he's done.
Excellent. You know, and I, of course, would agree. I think the year of the priest is great.
Yeah.
Isn't June 19th Father's Day? Or right thereabouts Father's Day?
It actually was. It was around the American observance of Father's Day. That's right. That's right, which was so appropriate. I tell you, I love the fact that we have this year of the priest. And not simply because I am a priest, but one of the things, having received this vocation, which I realize is a gift, you know, it's I think oftentimes in my own prayers, it's a gentle yoke that I wear that the Lord has allowed me to wear. And I pray that I live up to the demands, the call of this vocation. So to have a year of the priest helps me to appreciate the gift that we have all received, and that I in particular have been called to fulfill in the midst of the church, you know. And Kathy, do you think that the average Catholic in the pews, do you think that many of our listeners understand what the Catholic priest is? Or, for example, a lot of our Protestant listeners, do you think they understand the Catholic priest?
I don't really believe that the Protestant people out there understand the role of the priest for a Catholic. I don't think they understand that he gives us the sacraments, that he is our shepherd that leads us all the way to his bishop and then back to Rome. I don't think they see that. And really, I think also our Catholic brothers and sisters don't really have the full idea. I just don't think we're catechized as well as generations ago.
And Gus, what are your thoughts?
In the Old Testament, we have a priesthood, and just as the Old Testament, so many things in the Old Testament prefigure what's going to happen in the New Testament. So it stands to reason that in the New Testament, and we are in the New Testament times, that we have a priesthood. Christ worked miracles with physical matter, and we are physical beings. We're not just spiritual beings. He didn't just leave a spiritual testament to us. So the priesthood makes present Christ again, and especially makes the sacrifice of the Mass, the one sacrifice, he makes it present every day. That is clearly the Pope was pointing out, I believe, in the Year of the Priest, I was reading that you know, the priesthood is not just a functionality going out and ministering and all that, but the essence of the priesthood is sacrifice, offering the sacrifice of the Mass. I do think a lot of Catholics and a lot of our Protestant brethren don't understand the fact that it's not just a direct relationship with God, but that Jesus used material, because we are body and soul, and we need that. We need that. You know, God could have worked miracles without priests or anything, but he sent his apostles out to the world, and I'm grateful for that, you know?
Absolutely. I think so oftentimes the real temptation for Catholics, and particularly those who maybe don't have the help of a sacramental understanding, is to see the sacraments as barriers, things that get in the way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times our Protestant neighbors will ask, you know, ourselves as Catholics, why do you need priests? Jesus came, he fulfilled it all, it's done. You don't need priests anymore, you can go directly to God. And even that line of argument just reveals that in their mind, the priesthood gets in the way of their encounter with God. And of course, as Catholics, we respond, no, the Catholic priest is ordained by God, stands in the midst of us as a help, someone that rather than being a barrier is a bridge to our encounter with God. He gives us the sacraments, he preaches the gospel, he shepherds us in Christ's name. We would traditionally say he, you know, governs, sanctifies, and teaches in Christ's name, these three offices of the priest, which all the baptized share in the midst of the world, the priest in a unique way in the life of the church it herself. And that's why I think that this misunderstanding of, well, no, the priest gets in the way. Why do I have to go to a man? You know, particularly with the sacrament of confession, but in other areas too. Why do I need this person? You know, and not realizing this is what has been instituted by Christ. And this is the ordinary way for us to encounter Christ. And it's the priesthood. That's the gift. And this gift of the priesthood is something that as Catholic believers, as Christian believers, we're called to appreciate and to use to our own spiritual benefit. You know, the priest stands in a unique way as an icon of God. He stands as a herald of a liberating, challenging message. He stands, to quote St. Paul, as a steward of the mysteries of God. He holds in his own heart the presence and the mystery of God, placed there by Christ himself. He stands as an ambassador of reconciliation. He holds the power and the means to reconcile a sinner to God. What a powerful thing. And we see that throughout the Gospels when Jesus, before healing the man, dispenses his sins, absolves them. And the Pharisee said, who does this man think he is?
Mm-hmm.
this man that he can forgive sins.
Exactly.
You know, the first challenge to that authority, and it's precisely that authority that is passed on to the priest that the priest holds as the ambassador of reconciliation. You know, so the priest stands in this unique way, and it's a gift for each of us, for myself included, even those of us who hold the gift of the priesthood. We look to other priests. I go to confession, right? Look to another priest to preach the gospel to me, to correct me, to assist me in my own discipleship. And the gift of the priesthood is something that has been forgotten. And so this year of the priest that the Pope has declared really is a time for the whole church to renew itself in the understanding of what the priesthood is. But we can't overly sugarcoat this, I realize. And Gus, you mentioned earlier in the show about the scandals that we experienced here in the United States. Could you maybe comment on that? How did that affect you as a layman, a father, a husband, a believer? How did the scandals affect you?
Well, you know, it's obviously it's very sad. And, you know, woe to him by whom scandals committed. You know, Christ said in the Gospels, better that a millstone be thrown around his neck. I mean, scandal is a horrible thing. It draws people away from the faith. It did not shake my faith, because my clear understanding that the charism of infallibility does not mean impeccability, which means impeccability means preserving you from sin. I mean, no pope has that charism of sinlessness. You know, we are fallen human beings. Even the priests are fallen human beings. So again, if anybody takes scandal, then go right back to Acts of the Apostles, or even, you know, before that when Judas goes and hangs himself. I mean, he was just ordained a priest. The very next day, you know, he goes out and kills himself. It does not shake my faith. It does not surprise me. There was a great priest from University of Dallas who always used to say, well, that's life in a fallen world. Mm-hmm. We live in a fallen world. It is horrible, the damage that can be done by scandal. It has to be undone. It has to be undone publicly. The sad thing is, you know, I'm friends with a lot of priests. And, of course, you know, that affected them greatly. They have to bear a burden. The good ones have to bear that and bear that patiently. I think Christ told us to expect scandals and these things. When the Son of Man returns, will he find faith? Our faith is going to be shaken, but you know, we hold strong to the church and not to let that destroy our faith.
So. Yes, I think we were all shaken by the scandals that struck. And as you say, in the midst even of these scandals, we're called to make acts of faith and to realize that this is a small minority, and the vast majority of the men who are called to the priesthood are hardworking men who have said yes to the priesthood because of their love for God, their desire to serve God's people. But it was definitely a shocking reality in our country. Kathy, we hear a lot in the media about the shortage of priests, you know, that the Catholic priests just don't have enough. We feel it oftentimes in our parishes, you know, where, you know, there's just not a priest, or someone else has to cover, or a priest has to have a circuit of parishes and so on. You know, what are your thoughts on the shortage?
Well, we're living that right now at our church, because our priest just passed away a few weeks ago, and it is difficult. And we've run into this problem actually for the last 10 years. We've had a couple of priests who have retired and filled in for us quite a bit. I think that the call of the secular world is just louder. People don't take the time, young men don't take the time to listen, to open their hearts up to a vocation, to see if they have a vocation. I just think the secular world out there is so much louder than that quiet whisper of Christ in their hearts. I also think it's a job of parents, and being a parent myself, to let my sons know, I have three sons, that this is a wonderful vocation, that this is a wonderful life, that you will be blessed. It's a blessing in a different way, but a fuller blessing. I have one son that has considered the priesthood, but he wants to be a daddy. He wants to be a father in that way. And I tell him, if the Lord is calling you and you open yourself up to this grace, then he will bless you with so many children in your parish, and you will be a wonderful father in that sense over those children. But whatever he chooses to do, I know the Lord will bless him. But I think parents need to get involved and let them know that this is a wonderful vocation for you, and we support you.
Yes, Yes. And I know that the media, and it's sometimes shocking how many Catholics rely on the media to be their catechists, to teach them the truths of faith. You know, I would not turn to anyone else who is not an expert to teach me something else, and yet so oftentimes people turn to the media who are not theologians nor catechists, nor oftentimes even believers, and yet look to the media for their education. I'm curious, do you hear a lot, Kathy, as a woman, a laywoman, in regards to women's ordination? Are people still saying that the problem with the Catholic Church is it won't allow women?
I haven't heard much from the laity voicing women ordination. I think they understand that that is never going to happen in the Catholic Church. But Father, can you tell us exactly why that won't happen in the Catholic Church? Explain that.
Well, that's a good question. First, I was curious, you know, oftentimes being a priest, I'm not really sure what the conversation can be or is sometimes in the pews. And so it's good because I think that people are beginning to realize over the course of the past several decades of the church teaching in regards to what their priesthood is and so on, that this question has been, it appears, even theologically and popularly resolved. But theologically, how we've always explained it, and of course, again, how some people attempt to explain our teaching is, well, the Catholic Church doesn't like women, and the Catholic Church is hierarchical, and the Catholic Church, you know, is stuck in the past and overly patriarchal, and we can fill in the blanks. We've heard all this stuff, you know. But how does the Catholic Church explain her teachings,
you know, yes,
that have been given to her by Christ? Well, very simply, the church says we don't have the authority.
Right, exactly.
You know, that Christ himself ordained 12 men to the priesthood in the Last Supper, and that was the beginning of the order of Melchizedek, the new priesthood, and we do not have the authority. Now, some say, well, wait a minute, but Jesus also, you know, ordained those 12 first apostles were Jewish, they were Palestinian, so on and so on, and none of our priests are there. So how can you say that these do not apply, but when it comes to being a man or a woman, it does apply? And that's actually a very good question, and it goes to the heart of what gender is, because as Catholics, we understand that gender is so essential to who we are as persons that it's not like our culture or our hair color or even you know, our political or cultural identifications. When it comes to gender, it is who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Christ ordained 12 men, it was for a specific reason that is not equal to the fact that he ordained 12 Palestinian men to the priesthood, you know, and so on. So that's the answer to that. But I think that a lot of people say, well, come on, get with the times, ordain women. That'll solve your shortage, and you'll be more open, and you'll show the Catholic Church doesn't hate women. And again, we say we don't have the authority. And more importantly, as John Paul II tried to remind us, that the emphasis in the church has never been, nor should be, the ministerial priesthood.
Right.
The focus should be, and has always been, sainthood. Mm-hmm. That we are called to be saints, to be holy. And how are we holy? We follow the will of God. How do we know the will of God? We follow his teachings in the midst of the church. In the midst of the church, we're shepherded by teachers who explain to us, guided by the Holy Spirit, what Jesus is teaching, you know. And that's the part I think we have to reemphasize and put back in perspective when it comes to women's ordination. And it was formerly a very popular question. It has died down, I think, in most quarters, although every once in a while it is amazing how it
It'll
pops
pop
back
up.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important for us as Christian believers, as those who hold the fullness of the Christian faith, to understand how this is explained, because we don't want people to think that the church doesn't like women or is trying to suppress women, or, you know, the highest creation ever was Our Lady, the crown of the human
eminently
race.
Eminently qualified for priesthood, if anybody was. You know?
Absolutely.
But it's not a meritocracy. You don't get it because you're good. You
That's
know?
Right.
But
and it's important to note that Our Lady was with the apostles at Pentecost.
Right.
And the Acts of the Apostles say they left the upper room and the apostles preached. Even Our Lady, as you say, August, the highest, probably most qualified person to preach the gospel, and yet she remained silent after Pentecost. The apostles began to preach.
Yep.
In regards to other areas, when we discuss the priesthood and so on, thus, I hear a lot of conversation about celibacy. I'm curious, as a layman, when you get asked by your Protestant coworker or Protestant neighbor, yeah, your priests don't get married. What's that all about? What's an answer, Gus?
Lots of good answers there. I forget who I said, read said, there's not that big of a difference between a priest and a married man. A priest gives up all women, a married man gives up all women but one.
Wow, that's good.
So that's one humorous way. I remember Archbishop Fulton Sheen saying that desire for love that we have is transformed in the priesthood, and it's directed wholly towards Christ. St. Paul even says that it is better for a man not to get married, but it's better for him to get married than to burn. But he does say that if you have a choice, you know, be all for God. And so celibacy is not a dogma. People, I think, misunderstand that, but it's merely a discipline. In other words, Jesus cured St. Peter's mother-in-law. So obviously he had to have had a wife to have had a mother-in-law. You know, we've had a married priest, and in fact, we still have a married priest. For example, my neighbor half a mile away from me is Father Longenecker. He is a married priest because he was an Anglican priest who, thanks to a special dispensation by Pope John Paul II, was able to receive holy orders in the Catholic Church. But Father Longenecker will tell you priests should be celibate. He's not one to go advocate a married priesthood, but you know, his is a special exception. But this is not a matter of the church doesn't have the authority. The church does have the authority, but it's prudential. It's more prudent to be wholly focused, to give yourself wholly to God.
Yes, and I think too, also, Gus, our vast Eastern rites,
yeah,
within the Catholic Church, the many Catholics who often, you know, are in Greece or Russia and North Africa and so on. Also, the tradition there is predominantly a married priesthood.
Right, exactly. So,
and not only to give yourself wholly to God, but also to give yourself wholly to your flock that you shepherd.
Right.
Because how can you be a good priest to them and yet worry about your wife who's homesick with many children or a child in the hospital or something else going on in your personal life to be able to give yourself wholly to the flock?
Exactly.
I couldn't imagine myself as a priest, and I've only been ordained for 2 years. But I could not imagine attempting this ministry with a wife and with children, particularly with our teachings of how sacred and good married life and family life are.
It's not a repudiation of it. It's you know how good it is, and yet you know you're choosing Christ. The church is the bride of Christ, and like Christ, you are espousing the church. You know,
right. So. Well, I love when people say, "Well, the Catholic Church requires celibacy of its priests because it doesn't like sex, and it's really anti-sex." And I ask them, "Now, let's logically play out this argument."
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if we hate sex and we think sex is evil, then why would priests be giving that to God? You know, because as Christian believers, we give what is good and holy.
Give the best to God. Yeah, not the scraps.
Oh, yeah, I never thought about that, you know.
and why would Christ tell us to be fruitful and multiply?
Exactly.
Yes. But I also love, just several years ago, I was going to rent a car, and the rental car agencies, you know, now they'll send a driver to pick you up, and so this driver comes to pick me up, and I get in, he sees my collar. At the time, it was a seminary, but we wore collars in my seminary, and we get in, he's driving, he just looks at me, he's looking and looking, and I'm thinking, what, I got a, you know, something in my nose or something? And he says, finally, he says, okay, question. What, you know, Catholic priest, what celibacy, like, what's that all about? I said, because we want to imitate Jesus.
Yeah.
And that was the simplest, quickest answer I could give.
You know what, you're right.
And, hit it on the head.
Exactly, and he says, I get that, you know.
Yeah.
And it can help, you know. As this part of our segment of the show is winding down, I want to just mention a quick personal story in regards to celibacy. And I first felt a call to the priesthood when I was in the fourth grade. And I remember clear as day, at that age, memories are oftentimes blurry and so on. But that particular day, the memory is just burned into my mind. My mom picked my sister and I up from school, and we were driving home, and I remember sitting in the back of the car, back seat, and thinking at that time, now which one of the little girls in my fourth grade class was I going to ask to be my girlfriend? Yeah, I was a Casanova. and I don't even know what it means to have a girlfriend in the fourth grade, but I just knew it was very important. I had to figure it out. And out of the clear blue, I remember thinking, well, I'll become a priest. You know, I can love them all. And at the time, you know, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, you know. And as I've gone through my formation and have grown, I hope, in my own Christian discipleship, I've been able to look back now and in God's providential plan, been able to see how early on God was fashioning my heart to understand the gift of celibacy. Because what celibacy is a call to love more and deeper. What it is not is a call not to love. Because that has another name. It's called death. Yeah. Eternal death.
Right.
To not love or not be lovable and so on. But celibacy, particularly of the priest, is to love more and to love more deeply in imitation of Christ.
Yeah.
And that'll bring us to the end of our first segment. We hope that you stay with us and that you join us for our second segment of Pathways to Rome.
You're listening to Pathways to Rome, starring Father Jeffrey Kirby, along with Kathy Kerfoot and Gus Killow. Pathways to Rome is a Mediatrix radio production and can be heard weekly at this time. If you would like to listen to this show again or previous broadcast of Pathways to Rome, visit our website, www.CatholicRadioNSC.com. That's CatholicRadioNSC.com. Pathways to Rome was made possible by donations from Dr. Larry and Iris Minetti, Jim and Jan Carino, Donald and Marilyn Reichert, an anonymous sponsor of Catholic Radio, and contributions from Mediatrix Radio listeners. To learn more about Pathways to Rome, or to listen to this or other episodes, Mediatrix Radio's website is www.CatholicRadioNSC.com.
Come now, you rich, weep and wail over your impending miseries. James is very blunt about what will happen to us if we become so comfortable in our wealth that we believe we don't need God, so we stop seeking His kingdom. What obstacle does our money put before us, hindering our bringing God's love and compassion to others? Get rid of it. How? By investing in the incorruptible treasures of heaven so that God will then make us vessels of His mercy. And anyway, it's not our money. I'm Joe Galloway.
Put the power of video to work for you. Whether it's a short marketing presentation or an hour-long training video, turn to the Emmy Award-winning experts at Extreme Vision Studios. Present your message clearly and concisely. Video allows you to produce your image and gives you a professional look that shines. Call Extreme Vision Studios today for a free consultation. The number is 864-590-9970. That number again is 864-590-9970. Extreme Vision Studios, proud sponsor of South Carolina Catholic Radio. Polydeck Screen Corporation, a proud sponsor of Catholic Radio, was founded in Spartanburg in 1978 to manufacture and market modular synthetic screen media in North America, serving the gold, copper,